Welcome to Wise and Nice, a true crime podcast with your hosts
Danny Armstrong
and Kelly Lee.
Please remember that we mean no disrespect to anyone mentioned in this episode or across any of the Wise and Nice platforms. We have an interest in true crime and related topics, and whilst we may offer our own personal views on certain items, it is meant to be educational and as light-hearted as possible. The information we present is collated from research gathered from the internet, and we reference and credit our sources wherever possible.
If you've liked what you've heard and want to join in with us, follow us on our socials, Instagram, Wives and Knives the Pod, Twitter, at Knives Wives, and Facebook, Wives and Knives Pod. We also have a little website where we post photographs and other information about the cases that we research. And this is wivesandknives.wixsite.com/my site. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Wives and Knives.
Hello everybody, thank you for joining us again.
Yes, I hope you're all well out there. Kelly, how are you?
Oh yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, not bad at all. I was going to say I'm enjoying the lovely weather, but it started raining here now, so...
Yeah, typical British weather. It was boiling yesterday, like genuinely really hot, and today it looks miserable as hell.
Yeah, there's no consistency, is there?
Not at all.
What have you been up to?
Just generally nice things. I've had quite a pleasant week. I saw Jane McDonald on Wednesday.
Oh my God, yeah. How was that?
I figured that most people listening will know who Jane McDonald is.
You do mention her like quite a lot, to be fair.
Pretty, so basically, my mum loves Jane McDonald. But yeah, we went to this like charity event. It was raising money for a hospice. It was really nice, actually. It was so well organised. Really like fancy venue. You had a meal and then Jane came up on stage and she just talked a bit. It was a bit like Loose Women Live kind of thing. So it was really funny. And she just chatted about like what she'd been up to and a few little stories about her mum who like the hospice helped a lot. And before she passed away, but it wasn't sad at all, it was just proper funny. And there was a raffle and an auction, and I've never like seen in real life like a charity auction before, but like some things went through really large amounts of money, so it was quite fun to watch. We did not bid on anything. There was like a few things that we were like, oh, we could bid on that, and then it was like the starting bid was like £100 and we were like, no, it's all right.
I always get really nervous at things like that, you know, like that I'm going to sort of bid on something that I don't mean.
In case you accidentally bid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so embarrassed that I can't actually afford that. My apologies, Jane. Please don't hate me.
Yeah. But honestly, like, she seemed so nice. She was, like, going across the room, I assume, to go to the toilet at one point, and my mum was stood super close to her, and my mum like span round and went, can I just say hello, Jane? Oh. And Jane McDonald went, hello, love. Oh. And my mum was like, oh my God. So it was really good. It was just a bit of a long drive there and back, but yeah, really totally worth it. Like, I'd do it again. It was nice, and they must have raised so much money for the hospice as well, which is good. And tonight I'm going to see Jarvis Cocker of Pulp do a reading of his new book in Manchester.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I think we're going to go out for something to eat beforehand.
Lovely. Yeah. Do you know, I have a Jarvis, it's not mine, but my brother, he was at uni in Sheffield, and... he was on his way to get some beer, I think, for like a house party, met Jarvis Cocker and invited him to the party, and he actually went.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah, so my brother's got like a couple of pictures of him and Jarvis like at this party, so it's quite funny.
That's well good. Yeah, so that's what I'm doing with my evening.
Lovely.
You got anything fun planned, or is it just regular life?
Yeah, mainly regular life. As I mentioned to you earlier, I am dog sitting at the moment. And also I've double booked myself, so I'm cat sitting. So I handed off the dog later on today and then taken over the cat sitting. So that's my life right now. What have I been up to? I went to the Delph on Wednesday night with a good friend of mine because the weather's, you know, has improved. So the water temperature has risen. So I was like, oh, it's the right time now for me to get back swimming. So I got all my kit together, like my wetsuit and everything, went to meet my friend, got there and she was like, can't be arsed. I was like, oh, neither can I. It feels really cold. So we literally sat outside, ate cake and drank coffee while we watched another friend do like three laps, which was pretty nice really. But like everyone was like, oh, have you been in? I was like, no, I just got cake instead. They were like, oh, that's supposed to be the reward after you've done your laps. I was like, yeah, well, I went straight to the reward, stop judging me. But
that sounds like what I'd do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do it all the time, but you know, it was a bit chilly. So like all day I've been thinking, oh, I'm already cold. I don't want to get in the water. And then when my friend was like, I can't be arsed, I was like, oh, yes.
Thank you.
Because if she'd have wanted to go in, I would have gone in. I was fully prepared to. But yeah, anyway, I had a lovely time. It was really nice. Just sat outside watching everybody else burn calories whilst I ate cake.
Nice. That sounds like the right thing to do.
Yeah, like I say, really enjoyed it. So I had a really nice catch up. I didn't go swimming, but Cassidy went swimming yesterday and I was watching, like just observing from like the viewing gallery upstairs. And right, I don't know if I was just being OTT here, but there was this guy right in the pool and he was just at the top of the deep, like at the deep end, and he was just like relaxing at the side. And I swear to God, he didn't do any swimming, right? all he kept doing was like going underwater with his goggles on and then coming back up and then resting again. And I was like, what are you up to, you? And like I say, there was just something about him, and I kept watching him, and I realized that all he was doing was going under the water when this pair of young girls were swimming near him. And it just freaked me out a bit. I was like, is he a fucking paedophile?
That's very odd.
Yeah, it was so odd, to the point where I couldn't like keep my eyes off him, because I was just like really like aware of what he was doing. And I thought, are the lifeguards aware? Like, who goes to a swimming pool and doesn't swim?
Yeah, that is very strange.
Especially when you don't have kids yourself. Like, I can understand it if your kids are, like, you know, messing about in the shallow end and you're just chilling, watching, like, keeping an eye on them. But there was none of that. It was really odd. And then I think he clocked me, but I was like, I'm not scared. I just kept staring him out. And so then he moved, and he literally moved, like, his line of sight was the kiddie pool. And I was just like, oh, God, it's freaking me out. Like, I really didn't like it. And I was so close. I was, like, trying to, like, catch a lifeguard's eye. And I was thinking to myself, what do I say? Like, I could literally just be accusing some guy of, you know, perving on kids when he's not. I was like, how do you start that conversation? What do I do?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was really, really off-putting. Brighter story. Then yesterday afternoon went for a nice little walk, and then went out for dinner with my daughter, which was really nice.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it was really like a little girly night. It was really nice.
Cute. That's nice. Where did you go?
Just to a local bistro. It's called AJ's Bistro. It's really cute, actually. I've been twice now, and each time it's been really nice. The food's been nice, and the staff have been lovely. So, yeah, I'd recommend it.
Oh, that's lovely. Very nice.
Yeah, that's about it for my updates. Shall we get to business?
Yes, definitely.
I was going to say, there's been another fecking shooting in America.
Yeah, that's so sad.
It's just, whoa, God, I can't even. It's just so annoying. Do something about it.
I know. How many sort of events like this are not events? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, how many instances of this is it going to take?
I mean, I'm probably not accurate here, but it's definitely in the high double figures, you know, for the, like, for a year, basically, I think.
Yeah.
Multiple, this is, it feels like it's happening weekly.
Yeah, it's what horrendous, really.
What has to happen before they actually do something about it? It's just, you know, America is so fucking stupid. Sorry, rant about that, because it just really fucking grinds my gears. Have you heard about Ava White? She was the 12-year-old who was fatally stabbed November last year in Liverpool.
Yeah. I do know the case.
The perpetrator has been found guilty and everything, been sentenced. So, but it's just really, you know, far too, he's 14.
Yeah. Again,
far too young. It's just, you know, it's ridiculous.
I know. I wonder, yeah, I mean, we won't know because he's 14 and he'll be protected, but I wonder, was there any signs that he was this sort of violent, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's an extreme
reaction. Has it come from nowhere?
Mm-hmm. Like you say, age and the protection levels probably won't find out for, well, I'm going to say for a long time, if at all, will we?
Ever.
Right, so that's depressing shit. Let's get to the case, shall we?
Yes, please.
So this week we are going to be talking about Helen McCourt. Have you heard about, I know I mentioned it to you earlier this week, have you heard much about Helen?
Yeah, I know, like, the background and the significance of the case, because it resulted in a change in the law.
Absolutely, yeah, it's a really big case, this. So we'll just get straight into it. Helen McCourt was born on the 29th of July 1965 in Bootle, Merseyside, to mum Mary and father William McCourt. She was a well-loved, happy and mischievous child who was full of fun. Younger brother Michael followed a few years later, and the two had a great relationship. They were extremely close. And Mary actually said that Michael wasn't her child. He was Helen's, because she just, like, mothered him so much, which I think is really cute.
Yeah.
Sadly, Helen's parents' marriage didn't last, and they later divorced. And after some time, Mary met John Sandwell, and he was also divorced with two children. And the two of them became a firm couple, and he became an active stepfather to Helen and Michael. So the family, now living in Billinge, which is in Wigan, were very close, and Helen was said to be very family orientated. She got on well with her stepdad, John, and as she grew up, her and her boyfriend would even sometimes socialise with Mary and John. Yes. So at the age of 22, she was a popular and well-liked young woman. She was very attractive and had, once again, cool 80s hair. So Helen had a job working as an insurance clerk for the Royal Insurance Company in Liverpool, and she had recently started dating a guy called Frank. So on the 9th of February 1988, Helen went to work as normal. So she caught the bus from Billinge to Wigan train station, and then she got the train to Liverpool Lime Street, where she would then walk to the office. And it was just an average day for Helen. Like, she was excited for a date that she'd got planned with Frank later that evening. And she also was going to meet her mum for lunch in the city. The weather that day was quite wild, with a storm hitting the area. So Helen rang her mum three times that day just to check in and chat, and also to cancel their lunch date because of the bad weather. Like, she didn't want her mum travelling.
Yeah.
So she also called one of her friends who she worked with, like, multiple times to discuss, like, what she was going to wear for the date that she got planned with Frank. So Helen last spoke to her mum at approximately 4 p.m. that day. And she'd even asked her mum if they could have like an early tea, so that she could like have plenty of time to get ready for the day and wash her hair, etc. But by 5:40 p.m., Helen hadn't returned home. So that wasn't massively after she was due home. It was about 10 minutes. But this was quite unusual in itself, because regardless of how late she was going to be or if she missed a bus or anything, she would always call her mum, like, to advise that she was running late.
Yeah.
So Marie, I would say it's spelt Marie, but it's pronounced Mary. Have you ever heard? I don't know if this is just a northern thing, because I used to have an auntie Marie, but it was spelt Marie.
Yeah.
You know, it's spelt this anyway. So Mary wasn't initially worried, because obviously due to the weather, there had been some delays, and particularly the trains from Lime Street to Wigan had been delayed because I believe a tree had fallen on the line. So another half an hour passed and Mary really started to worry, because as I said, this was massively out of character for Helen. So yeah. Mary knew something was wrong. So the family started to ring around hospitals, they rang friends, but no one had heard from Helen. So Helen's stepdad, John, and her boyfriend, Frank, actually went to look for her. So they got in the car and they retraced Helen's journey. So they drove to Liverpool, they drove to her office, and then they drove to the station. And again, no sign of Helen. They spoke to staff at the station, and staff confirmed that there were now no problems with the trains. So, like, there were no delays or other sort of accidents that could account for Helen's lateness. So, extremely concerned, they went to the closest police station and reported her missing. Now, I have to really give it to the police here. Like, they instantly took it seriously and started making inquiries. Even the police officer in charge said that Mary could call him every hour to check if there were any developments, which she did.
Yeah.
Mary called every hour up until 4 a.m. in the morning, until two police officers came to the house. Like, they didn't have any news, but they wanted to get more information about Helen and her movements. So as you can imagine, the entire family were besides themselves. They knew something bad had happened. And the police agreed. Like, the serious crime squad took the lead very early on. The next morning, with Helen still missing, the police stepped up their investigations and conducted inquiries around the local area. So the police retraced Helen's last movements. They handed out flyers, they did house-to-house inquiries and thorough searches, and they even set up a local base of operations. So, like, every effort is being made to find Helen. So it was quickly confirmed that Helen did, in fact, make the journey home to Billinge. She had caught the train and then the bus as planned, so she must have gone missing on the short walk from the bus stop on Rainford Road and her home on Standish Avenue, which was just a 5-minute walk. Now, this walk would take Helen past the George and Dragon pub on the main road, and it was one of the first places that the police went. So the pub was a popular spot for the young'uns of the village, and Helen frequented it with some regularity. In fact, as part of their inquiries, the police had discovered that on the Sunday evening prior to her disappearance, Helen had had an altercation in that very pub. So her family had said that it was about some photos that Helen, who always was like the one with the camera, had taken. I've read it was about a photo of an ex-boyfriend, and the new girlfriend had kicked off with Helen in the loos. So whatever happened, it ended up with both girls being barred from the pub.
Right.
So the police spoke to members of staff at the George and Dragon, in particular, landlord Ian Sims. Now, Ian Sims was a 31-year-old married family man with two small children and had been in the post of landlord for approximately a year at this point. So the police interviewed him, but he said he didn't like he didn't know Helen very well, and he hadn't even been in the pub between 4 and 6 p.m. on the night that she'd gone missing. Now, the senior officer in charge of the case, he wasn't very happy with Sims or how he answered the questions. Like, they found him to be quite nervous, twitchy, and just generally strange. So they took him to the police station for further questioning. Witnesses advised that Ian Sims liked to think of himself as quite the ladies' man. So he often flirted with the young women in the pub, and he'd sent drinks over to Helen and had made sort of like sexual advances towards her, all of which were refused. And Mary confirmed this, and she explains that Helen had told her that she didn't like the landlord of the pub, nor the way he acted towards her. He was a married man, and everyone knew that he had a mistress. So statements are taken from Sims. They're also taken from his 21-year-old girlfriend, the pub manager, and anyone else that was on the premises that day. And they find that there are like large inconsistencies between Sims's statement and the others, particularly from the Tuesday night when Helen went missing. So by this point, very early on, the media have picked up the story, and it isn't just the local papers, like it's the national news now. And it's a very big deal in the local community. So by Thursday, a witness has come forward to say that they heard a scream shortly after 5:30 p.m. on the night that Helen had gone missing. So that's like not long after the bus would have dropped her off at the stop.
Yeah.
And they say that this scream is like cut short. So more concerning information is when 15 miles away on the Manchester Ship Canal, a dog walker finds several bloodied towels and an almost complete set of male's clothing. So this is like mainly promotional clothing for a beer, like what you'd get free.
Right.
And this beer, I believe it was Labatt's, was like on promotional sale at the George and Dragon at the time. So Sims is re-interviewed. He is like a major person of interest. And when faced with the inconsistencies in the statements, he quickly admits that he lied. He was, in fact, in the pub between 4:20 p.m. and 6 p.m. on the night that Helen had gone missing. So the police focused their efforts like on his flat, which is above the pub, and his car, which they impound. And on searching his car, which is a Volkswagen Passat, I believe, they find traces of blood, spots on the rubber sill of the boot and on the boot carpet. And they also find an opal and sapphire earring in the boot as well. He quickly explains the blood away, saying that one of his dogs, a Rottweiler, had cut his paw. So that was why there was blood on the car. But science. It was quickly proven that it was human blood and it was sent for testing. And Mary confirmed that the earring actually belonged to Helen. So it was one from a pair that she'd been given for her 21st birthday, and she'd been wearing them the night that she disappeared. So, I mean, I guess at this point, Mary must have realised, you know.
Yeah.
Helen wasn't coming home, and Sims is arrested on suspicion of murder. So the police continue the investigation, and they find more DNA evidence to support, you know, the other somewhat circumstantial evidence. So in the pub, specifically his flat above it, they find the back of one of Helen's earrings, and again they find more traces of blood. So one of these traces of blood contains Sims' bloody fingerprint.
Oh, God.
Yeah. On the the other places that they find blood is they find it on the carpet at the foot of the stairs leading to his apartment. They find it on the bedroom carpet in his flat, wallpaper in the bedroom, and like quite a splashed amount of wall on the wallpaper next to the outside door to Sims's accommodation. And that's where the police believe Helen was first attacked. So in March, Helen's handbag, her coat, scarf and trousers and mittens are found on a riverbank in Earlham by a young boy. So that's about 20 miles away. And they were like stuffed in a black bin liner. And this bin liner proved to have been taken from a roll in Sims's pub. Her brand new trousers, which she'd worn for the first time the morning of her disappearance, had fibres on them from the stairs, landing and bedroom carpet of Sims's flat. So it kind of indicated that she was dragged upstairs after being attacked by him. A witness working in the pub's restaurant would later testify that she heard dragging noises from upstairs during the time of the murder. Also found with the clothing was a length of electrical flex, and this was again similar to other lengths of flex found in Sims's flat, which apparently he used in like tying up his dogs. The flex that they found had like dog teeth marks in it, and these were matched to his dogs. It also had the flex had like strands of human hair kind of like stuck to it, and they were matched to hair from Helen's rollers. So the police believe that this flex was actually used to strangle her. They find more jewellery as well, bracelet, I think one bracelet and two rings, and these are like caked in mud. And that mud matched the mud found on the clothing from the Hollings Green scene at the canal. So the bloody towels and the man's clothing. And this clothing is also confirmed as belonging to Ian Sims. And it's his wife and his mistress that like say that it's definitely his clothing. So the case against him is like rock solid.
Yeah, there's no way it could have been any other explanation than he's the one.
Absolutely. But despite that, Sims claims that he was framed. He denies murdering Helen and he will not admit any involvement. So at his trial, which began on the 13th of February 1989, he claimed that someone had broken into his flat, changed into his clothes, and then attacked and murdered Helen before stealing his car to dispose of her body. And then that person had left his clothes where they would be found to incriminate him. All of this would have happened whilst he was in the pub himself with his like massive guard dog. So, you know, no mate, I don't think so. So during the trial, which lasted 3 weeks, Ian Sims showed absolutely no remorse. He was, you know, stone cold, and he refused to tell them where Helen's body was. The jury, much like ourselves, didn't believe him. And on the 14th of March, after only 5.5 hours of deliberation, they convicted him of murder. And so he was sentenced to life with a minimum of 16 years. As you mentioned at the start, this case is massive because it's one of the, Ian Sims was one of the first murderers to be convicted on DNA evidence without the victim's body being found.
Yeah, that's sort of how I'd heard of it, because...
Yeah, the first in the UK anyway. In the absence of Helen's body, a new technique, which is what we now know as familial DNA, was used. So using blood samples from her parents to compare with the blood found in his apartment, on his clothes and in the boot of his car. So the odds were 126,000 to 1 that the blood was from a child of Helen's parents. In 1999, Sims challenged the findings of the DNA evidence that linked him to the crime, But obviously, DNA technology, which was in its infancy at the time, when it was first tested, it had improved massively. So now it actually suggested the odds against the blood not being Helen's were 9 million to 1. Yeah. So how somebody can, you know, can still maintain that they had no involvement with that level of DNA evidence is beyond me. The police continue to search for Helen and work on her case, and still do. The family too, they frequently search for her. In one program I watched about this case, it said that they would like meet on a Sunday, which was Mary's day, and instead of sort of like having a nice family dinner, they'd go and search for Helen. So a different spot each time. They'd get all the tools out and, you know, get all the waterproofs on and just go and search. But sadly, she's never been found.
That's so sad.
It is, isn't it?
Mm.
In 2008, the family had a memorial bench placed at their church in Helen's memory. I just find that so sad to have a grave, because it's somewhere you can go and visit, you know, you get that closure, that peace. But that's not, you know, that's not what's happening for the McCourt family. It's an ongoing trauma. It's like an open wound for them that's got no closure because there's no body. I just don't get why he's not telling them. As I said, the police are still actively following up leads. So on the 16th of October 2013, the police exhumed a grave behind St. Aidan's Church in Billinge after receiving a tip-off that Helen's body had been placed there, like in an open grave ahead of a burial in February 1988, so not long after she'd gone missing. But this exhumation showed that Helen's body hadn't been placed there. Sims is still in prison at this point in 2013, but he has served a fair chunk of time. A lot less, you know, like, well, he would have served a lot less if he had just been open and told them where Helen's remains were. Since his incarceration, he had been applying for parole, like, consistently.
Yeah.
But he kept getting refused. Again, that would have been less likely if he'd just divulged the information. In December of 2015, Mary decided that she wanted to work on bringing about a law which prevented killers from getting parole if they withheld where the victim was. So she began campaigning for Helen's law. Like, she didn't want Ian Sims to get out without knowing where Helen was. In May of 2019, the Ministry of Justice announced plans for that change in the law. And in July of 2019, the Secretary of State for Justice announced that it would be adopted in England and Wales. But sadly, on the 21st of November of 2019, before the law could be implemented, it was reported that the parole board had met earlier in the month on the 8th of November and had recommended Sims for release, finding that he had met the terms for his release. So the family appealed, because obviously if the law was in place, he'd be refused parole. So they appealed, they campaigned further, but in February of 2020, that failed, so mm-hmm. they were unable to keep Sims in jail. It was refused by the High Court, and he was released on license. Now, what I find is an extra fucking, like, jab to Mary McCourt and the rest of the family is that she was actually told to pay Ian Sims £40,000 for legal fees, and she had to. You know, thankfully it was crowdfunded by, you know, supporters of Helen's law. But I just think that's just such a fuck you to the family.
Yeah, definitely.
It's disgusting. Helen's law eventually came into effect on the 4th of November 2020. And I've got a quote here. Justice Secretary and Lord Chancellor Right Honourable Robert Buckland, QC MP, said, "Denying families a chance to lay their loved ones to rest is a cruelty beyond words, compounding their grief further. Helen's Law makes it absolutely clear that murderers and evil sexual offenders who refuse to disclose information about their victims should expect to face longer behind bars. Thanks to the tireless efforts of Mary McCourt and the other campaigners, more families should get the answers and closure they deserve." So, Mary still wants to find Helen. You know, sadly, she believes her time's running out. She actually believes the likeliest location for where Helen's body lies is within a triangle described by Hollins Green in Warrington, Rishton in Salford, and an area locally known as the Clay Pits. And I believe that police divers have been, well, I know that police divers have been there. It makes sense to search that area because at each of these points of the triangle is where, like, items include, you know, like Helen's clothes and
stuff,
plus a spade were found. So, you know, it makes sense. But as I said, the police are fully on board with this and they have searched the area. But again, she still hasn't been found. There are lots of theories about this case, reasons as to why he did this. It was discovered that, you know, when Sims had banned Helen from the pub, several customers attested that he had used obscene language about her and said how much he hated her. And that he had made sexual advances to her, which, as I mentioned before, she had rejected. He also, it's said that he also believed that she knew about his affair with his 21-year-old mistress and, like, gossiping about it. So, like, had that been the reason why he had decided to kill her? As I said, lots of rumours. They're all unsubstantiated. Like, few people mentioned that they believe Helen and Sims were actually an item, and that this was all like a ruse, like to pretend that they didn't like each other to cover up the relationship. I don't buy that.
No, not at all.
Also, that was she perhaps pregnant with his child? Again, let's stop disrespecting the victim. That's just ridiculous. Also, I believe Sims had said that he didn't hate her at all and that they had had sex at one point. I just don't buy into this.
I don't.
There is a rumour locally about Ian Sims having access to an incinerator at Billinge Hospital. So people sort of like say, did he dispose of her body in this incinerator? General consensus is unlikely, because why would he burn the body and not burn everything else?
Some things like that, yeah, it would make sense.
Of course, like, at least dispose of the evidence better. I don't really go by that. It just doesn't make sense to me. Sims is out. Like I said, he's out now. He will be 68, I think. His conditions state that he is never allowed to come back to Billinge nor the areas where the evidence was found. I think it's unlikely that Helen will be found, but if she is, it won't be because he tells us. I feel like it will just be one of those things where somebody one day is walking and they see something.
Yeah.
Like I say, all the areas that where the clothes have been found and things like that have all been searched by the police and the family. So I genuinely hope for Mary's sake, I genuinely hope that they do find her remains one day.
Yeah. Yeah. So do I. I think they've been looked for so thoroughly and for so long. Like, where could they be?
Yeah, exactly. And like I say, I know we, you know, we often sort of highlight when the police don't do a great job, but I genuinely, throughout from sort of like initial reporting to now, they are so invested in this case and they've really, you know, gone above and beyond. So,
oh yeah, from the first instance, they've done really well.
Absolutely. And, you know, Helen's Law as well is a great law. And I really, you know, I think it, I completely agree with Mary McCourt. I think that that should be the case. Interestingly, I found out that cannibal killer David Harker is the first known convicted murderer denied parole under Helen's Law. And that was on the 27th of October, 2021. So, you know, like I say, at least something good has come out of this.
Yeah.
You know, that's positive.
Yeah, they've done really well getting that law.
Yeah.
Definitely. Passed and everything, definitely.
Such a shame that they just missed out. I think it was due to the, might have been the, like the 2019 elections, which stalled it. So like it sort of like got forgotten for a minute and then was like re-picked up by new government, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what thoughts and feelings on this case, Danny?
It's just sort of hopelessly sad. And he definitely did it. There's no question about that. I think he's ridiculous, like absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I don't think that he should have been. I think 68, like he could still go on to commit crime again.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, how many milestones has Helen missed out on, you know, and her family? No doubt she would have been married by now and had kids. And he, like, 68's not that old, you know. You can still have a life at 68.
Yeah, like, he's still got a chunk of time to do whatever he wants or enjoy his life.
Exactly, it's just not fair. Right, well, that is it. That's the case. I'm not going to say I hope you enjoyed it, but I hope you found it informative. Anything?
It's quite a well-known one as well, people might have heard of it before.
Yeah, absolutely. Plenty of podcasts and articles to read on this case. So, you know, go for it. Do some more research.
And there's books as well, isn't there?
There is, yeah. Her mum wrote a book.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure it was a mum that wrote a book, because I know that my mum's read that book.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's a case that my mum is interested in. I think she remembers it all
sort
of playing out very well.
Again, it's one of those of the time, and it's quite famous in the local area. So I hope you've enjoyed that, Jackie.
Yeah.
Right, well, we'll be back next week. What are we going to be back with?
We're going to do a bit of a mini.
Yeah, we'll do a mini for sure.
Yeah. Loads of like recommendations, like crimey related recommendations stored up.
Okay, well, let's do an update, like a recommends with mini updates or something.
Yeah, I'm going to recommend something just as a little, because it's not related to crime at all.
Oh, a little taster.
In the slightest, nothing to do with crime, but it has brought me so much joy this week.
Oh God, I know what you're going to say. Go on.
No, I'm not. It's something else. So last week I went to that literary festival.
Yeah.
And authors brought up this series that was a graphic novel and now has been released on Netflix. It's aimed at teens. It's like a teen drama. But my friend Deb, who also listens to the podcast, had watched it that week and was like, you have to watch it, you'll love it so much. So it's on Netflix and it's called Heartstopper.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's defo aimed at teenagers. Like, when I was watching it, my husband, oh my God, you'll be watching Grange Hill next. I was like, yes, whatever. But I enjoyed it so much. If you have like teens in your life, get them to watch it, but watch it yourself. It was so good. It's got a fantastic cast, and it's essentially about sort of teenagers discovering their sexuality, coming to terms with them, but it's not scandalized, it's not sordid, it's very real and beautiful. And so many of the moments reminded me of being a teenager and how sort of important every little moment feels. It's just beautiful, honestly.
Yeah,
it's
quite a few like books in the series. It's not just one book, is it?
No, there's quite a few. The first series of the Netflix ended, and I had to message Deb straight away and be like, what happens with this and what happens with that? And she's like, I'll lend you the books. But it has been commissioned for a second and third series. So if you've not watched Heartstopper and you want something to make you feel like warm and fuzzy and nice inside, like, watch that. It's adorable.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's exactly what you need after this week's case.
It definitely is. But yeah, I've got loads of like crime recommendations and sort of psychology based recommendations for next week. I've been making a little note in my phone of things. So,
right. Perfect. Well, that's next week's episode sorted.
Yes. All right. Hope you're all keeping well out there.
Yeah. Stay safe, guys.
Bye.